Welcome to the Proper Mental Podcast. Normalizing open and honest conversations about mental health by having open and honest conversations about mental health. Bonus episode of the Proper Mental Podcast, and this is quite exciting because it's our first ever bonus episode. And it's a bonus episode because I suppose it's kind of a follow-up to my episode, which was number 7, and it's a follow-up because my guest today is my wife, Mrs. Kimberly Davis. Hi, babe.
Hi.
So this is really weird. It's a Saturday night, and because we're really like rock and roll, we're sat around the kitchen table with cups of tea in our pajamas, and we're going to have a chat about mental health, specifically my mental health and how it affected my wife, because it's something now that I'm in recovery, now that I'm doing pretty well, I'm in a much better place, I kind of have been realizing how much of an effect that my mental health, my behavior, my thought processes were having on my family and my wife and stuff like that. We thought it was really important. If we're going to look at all aspects of mental health rather than talk to people who have experienced it, was to talk to some people who have experienced someone else experiencing something. So, here we are. This is a bonus episode, first bonus episode of Proper Mental with Kim Davis. Like, subscribe, let us know what you think, all that sort of stuff. I'm gonna drop the music in here, and thanks for listening. Enjoy. Okay, so that was a seamless intro. Normally I do the episode and then I record a little bit beforehand, but we've decided to just do this in a while because we're sat in the kitchen. So there you go. Your first podcast, babe.
Oh, it's nice to be here in my own house.
It's really weird. It feels dead formal. We're like sat at the kitchen table just like looking at each other. But we both thought it was really, really important to do. And I suppose before episode 7, before my episode went out and I was humming and hawing about putting it out, I asked you to listen to it first to kind of, you know, almost fact check it for me, I suppose. But what was it like listening to that back first time around?
I'd say it was a tough listen. Like, I was excited to listen to it because it's like an insight into your head, like, with your thoughts, like, before you do this, it's more guesswork to, I guess, how you felt. And I think until I listened to it, like, the bits where you say about that day with Reese and you, like, what you'd plan to do, your suicide, like, I didn't know that, and that was, like, scary. So there were things, like, I knew you were struggling, but, like, I didn't realize that, like, you were at that point, you know. I found that really quite, like, scary. That's what I was found, like, upsetting about it. But it was, at the same time, I was really glad that I got to listen to it.
Yeah. I think that goes to show, like, how, you know, we can even hide how bad things are. You know, when you live with someone and you share a life with someone, you share a bed with someone, and you can still hide from them what's going on. You know, it just kind of, that's quite scary, really.
It's really scary. I think that struck me. I think it just shows how important communication is. Like, when you flip it to the other side, like, you had, when you talked about your day out and what went through your head and you went out, like, I was at home with a how old was Egg? About a week old, maybe?
Yeah, a couple of weeks old, probably.
Because she was born the 11th of December, and this was before Christmas. So, a week maybe older. I was sat at home with her, wondering at this point, I thought, like, our marriage really was in trouble, you know? First time I started thinking maybe I had to think about, like, if this was working, like, it was really stressful, and there was a big build-up to that point.
It's a rough time,
huh? And yeah, I was like, obviously, because I didn't know you were in that mindset, you were contemplating suicide. I just thought our marriage is in trouble, we're having problems, you're not happy with us, I didn't realize it was because you were struggling mentally, Well, I just didn't realize how bad you were.
And if you don't know that it's a mental health thing, if you don't know that it's depression talking, then of course you're going to look at, you're going to think it's like, is it our marriage? Is it, of course you're going to look at those things like, why is he behaving so oddly?
Yeah.
But I suppose we kind of get ahead of ourselves a little bit. One thing I really felt when I was in some of my worst patches, I felt that it kind of changed my personality. And I think when you change your personality and start doing things differently, after a while, that becomes the new normal. And I think for me, like, shit had become the new normal. So even when I thought I was having a good day, maybe I was still having a bad day. It just wasn't the worst day,
yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So let's rewind a little bit, right? Because we've been together 13 years, so it'll be 14 years this year. So we've kind of known, you've known me sort of man and boy, really. We were quite young.
Yeah, I was 18.
To go through that change, how would you, if you had to just describe me quickly, like back then when we met, so I'd have been in my early 20s then. So what was I like then when we first met?
Described as fun. Like some people would be like shocked to hear it. You had like a long hair and a ponytail and board shorts. You look kind of a bit of a surfer. You're quite laid back. You were always the person to like get people in the, so like, because we met in Italy, so we worked away. You were always like the instigator of stuff. So you'd get people to do like stupid games at our lunch break, or first to suggest going to a bar, or you took me to my first gig. Do a lot of traveling and gigs.
That sounds
amazing.
Yeah, I can see why you married me. Just for a bit of background, me and Kim worked for a holiday company. We met abroad, and we did that for years, years and years and years. And then we moved back in 2010, and we kind of moved back pretty suddenly. And we didn't really have a plan. And we lived at my mum and dad's for a bit, and we lived at Kim's mum and dad's for a bit, or Kim's dad's for a bit, I should say. We'll edit that out. And and then we got a little flat, and then we got a house. And at this point, I think I was kind of doing okay, I think. I don't think I was particularly happy, but because our environment had changed so much, we'd gone from that lifestyle to a normal lifestyle. And I think I felt like I had to fit in a certain box, and I just tried to crack on and make myself fit into that box.
Yeah.
And although I kind of felt all right mentally, I kind of feel like that might have been the start of some of the things that were to happen, maybe.
I would say so. I think that, like, it just slowly things crept in, but we could make excuses for a lot of that stuff. At first it was, we've moved back to the UK, you did, 10 years of that? Like, living this lifestyle where you're just, like, living out of a bag, travelling, doing what you want, no responsibility, bills, that kind of thing, it was really like fun lifestyle. So then to come back to the UK, it was just like, oh, it's just an adjustment period, we'll be all right.
And we had shit jobs, didn't we, when we first moved back? We both did like some really crappy jobs, and so if you got a crappy job and you feel a bit crappy, you kind of like, that makes sense, right?
Yeah. So then we were like, so we first went to lived with your mum and dad in South Wales, and then we were like, oh, maybe if you move back up here, it'd be a bit different, maybe a bit more social, and that would make us feel better. Mm. And then that was, then you got your full-time job. We were at my dad's house, and then you got your job, and then it was like being made redundant, and then it was an HMV. Do you remember at the time? Yeah. You were like, oh yeah, get to work in music. And, you got your full-time job, and we got our flat. The things just seemed to like...
They went quickly.
So it went really, from like... Really. So, oh, it's just because, you know, we're not half even dad's out and sharing, and, you know, we just need our own space. And then we got our own space, and then it was like, oh, well, it's cause, just because, you know, you hate your job, you feel better once... Was it your job then?
Mm.
I don't know then. So we go to the...
Well, there was always something.
There was always something, whether it was, somebody changed, you know, changed... Yeah, whether you change your job or somebody passed away, or, you know, there was a reason for why you'd be feeling down. There was
one thing I think about a lot when I think about that time as well. There was a lot of distraction, so there was like a real lot of external stuff going on. So I'd spend a lot of time traveling around, going to football matches because you worked at weekends, and I'd have like Saturdays to myself, and I'd go to a lot of football, and I watched a lot of football. And a lot of music stuff and a lot of stuff. I used to do a lot of clothes shopping, which sounds quite bizarre now because I've got about three outfits that I wear today. But it was all classic distraction techniques. Mm. It was all stuff that people do. Like, I was drinking a lot, hey?
And, you know,
and that's probably a whole other podcast in itself because I've knocked that on the edge. But, and when I used to drink, I wasn't always great with it. And I think, you know, I think I was deeply unhappy and I was self-medicating because I was unhappy, but I had no idea I was unhappy because I was doing what I thought everybody was supposed to do. You're supposed to have a job. You're supposed to not like it very much. You're supposed to go to the footy and get pissed at weekends, you know?
Yeah.
But eventually the wheels came off. Do you remember the start of that? Do you remember when you started thinking like, you know,
like, I didn't really notice until Reese came along. Mm. That's when I'd noticed a little, even in the lead up to him being born, like, I'd noticed maybe, you know, again, I didn't know if it was, you know, just stress or the situation or stress. Yeah, maybe that was married life. You know, we got married in the Reese come along a year after we got married. I thought maybe this is what happens. This is why people get divorced.
Just get married and turn into narcs. Yeah, and I mean, there was a lot of change, wasn't there? We moved back to the UK, and like 2 years later, we had a mortgage and we were married. And a year after that, we had a kid. And a year after that, we had another one.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of upheaval. But yeah, it's really weird because you kind of think with mental health that there's supposed to be a, you know, I don't know, some sort of trauma or some sort of thing, but there really wasn't for me. Like, I think life just kind of crept up on me, and
And I'd say so, because I say, like, when Reese was born, but at first not for a while, it was more just, this is like just like a sleep, you know, that I'm feeling stressed too, you know, like, you know, we're both in this, we're both. So I just thought that would be like normal, new baby in the house, new parents, like, but then I think it never, like, it'd go away and you'd forget. And then like you say, like, you're hulking to the, you know, like, it just become, I'm trying to think, it probably just before Meg was born, I really thought that, I think that's when I first said to me, that holiday, didn't we? I think there'd have been a lot of build up to that. And then, that holiday was the disastrous. And I remember saying to her, well, I'm just going to take Reese and go because you really didn't want to. And I think we'd been in you must have been down for a little bit in the run up to that, or because I remember being like, well, I'm going anyway. We need the space, need to get away from the house, need a change.
Yeah.
And you were dead set on not going. And I was like, okay, when you come back from work, I'll take Reese and I'll go. And then I think, why you were on your shift, at some point you changed your mind. So we went on that holiday, and I think that's when I first said to you, like, you need help, you're not right, like, you can't keep doing this, you know?
Yeah. And you know, like, it's mad really, because there was another couple of years after that, and I do think, I don't believe in regrets, I think everything happens for a reason, but, you know, I think not long after that, I think I went to therapy for the first, it can't have been long after that, I started working with Sean, And I didn't. And I started trying harder after that. I started looking, you know, I think not long after that's when I really started heavily getting into yoga.
I was going to say, like, I think that any time I brought up, because it was mentioned a few times, and that was the first, but each time you would do something, like, a little something. First it was yoga, because I think not long after that, is that when your manager in work first sent you to therapy? Well, I should have still grateful for that, you know, because I don't think you'd have... No, you're in a point where you'd have done that yourself unless they'd noticed. But
I might not have tried therapy off my own back later on.
Yeah. I mean, I know by the time you'd got to the appointment, you were in a better, like...
Yeah, only went once.
Yeah. But, yeah, so I feel like that day you kind of did enough to appease me, to, like, not just for me, but for yourself. But you did enough to make me not bring up medication again.
Mm.
So I think, like, at first it was... yoga, and I think maybe you started to meditate it, and then you
more exercise.
Yeah. You had your diet plans, you'd like research like supplements and vitamins
we've done a bit of a gut health rabbit hole for a while. It's mad where I looked
into all sorts of places,
everything apart from medication. And you know, we've actually got hopefully a really good guest coming up next month to talk about medication, because it's not for everyone. I would never recommend it, or I'm not for it or against it, but it really worked for me, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I think things had got about as bad as they were gonna get, and that's when the only thing I'd left to try was medication. That's the last thing. It was Auntie Chris. Shout out Auntie Chris if you're listening. I know she listens to the podcast, but when I went home on my own for that weekend, because I was having a tough time, I just went down to mum's the night for the weekend. Yeah,
panicked the whole family. They thought we were getting divorced. But it was a supportive decision. My suggestion, I think, if I remember.
Because I was off work, so I closed the business down that night, and I was off work for a bit, and I was on the meditation course, and I was really working that hard, and walking and exercising and meditating, and that was really hard because it just wasn't working. And do you know what? Like, I don't think I've told you this before. This is like a bit mad, but I do remember driving back from one of the meditation classes and being a bit upset because I did find them quite emotionally challenging. And then a couple of days later, I was going down to mum's, and I remember thinking, like, I'm going to leave home and I'll have said goodbye to you and the kids, and then I'll go and see mum and dad. And when I leave there, I'll say goodbye to mum and dad. And I said, I'll have a brief window where I've said goodbye to everyone important in my life. I remember thinking, like, you know, when I drove down there, I remember thinking, like, this would be a really good time.
Wow.
This would be a really good time. And then I spoke to Chris, shout out Auntie Chris, and she was telling me about meds. And obviously she's a nurse, you know.
Yeah.
And we talked about medication, and I kind of thought, do you know what? And when I got back, that's the first thing I said to you, wasn't it? I said, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And then I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. And I had to get you to ring the doctor, didn't I?
I remember phoning for you. And the receptionist was lovely. And she asked if you knew I was making the appointment. Which I thought was good. They must want to know if someone's going to get surprised with a phone call. But they did. I remember you being really nervous about it. And, you know,
I couldn't do it. I was so anxious.
Really just could not do it.
And I knew that it was the last thing I had to try. You know, I really felt like I'd try, other than like go to like fucking Peru and get off my head on ayahuasca.
I remember you suggesting that actually. Yeah, I do remember.
See, I really looked everywhere. Yeah, I really looked everywhere. Like, I did seriously consider psychedelics, but I always thought, like, oh, you know, what if they like help me do the other thing, you know, rather than help me see clarity? What if they convince me I'm right? But and I remember you phoned for me, and then you put the phone down and said, right, the doctor's going to phone you back this morning. And if you remember, I broke down. I had a real cry. I think like at that time I was still in denial, and I didn't, like, now I'll talk to anyone about my mental health. I don't care. Like, it doesn't define me. You know, and if anything, I think I'm better for it, because it's made me like really appreciate my life. It's made me really appreciate you. It's made me really appreciate the kids and being a dad and like, I don't know, I feel like I've got almost like, it sounds cheesy as hell, but almost like a second chance, you know, because for they're still really, really young. And through a lot of their early years, I wasn't the dad that I knew I could be or thought I was supposed to be, or I can't quite decide what sort of dad I wasn't. Because sometimes I was great and sometimes I wasn't, you know? So I feel like I've got a second chance. And hearing you say things about, you know, doubting our marriage and stuff like that, well, I feel like I've got a second chance at that as well, which is nice. So yeah, so meds like ended up being really, really important for me.
Yeah,
just the missing piece of the puzzle.
It was great that you talked to us. I think about that. I made that appointment. I went to pick up the prescription for you because I didn't want you like, you know, panicking or feeling any like embarrassment or just anything. Yeah. I thought I went and picked it up. I think you based on it even putting your mouth for you.
He did.
I literally put it in your mouth and give you a drink of water. You're not getting out of this one.
It's mad, yeah. And then, like, there's a couple of weeks of side effects and stuff like that, but they kicked in quick, a bit quicker than it says they did. So I don't know if that was placebo. I don't know if, like, all the other stuff had got to a point where it just needed that little push over the edge to start working. But
whatever it was, like, a miracle. Well, because they said told you it'd take about 2 weeks
to feel effects.
A few days, I'd really noticed it. I remember thinking like, oh, he's back. Like I'd forgotten. Like, do you say with like the pressure, it kind of creeped in really slow. A little bit like, do you remember when like we both got fat? Do you know? And you were like, why didn't you look back on this photo and go, why didn't you tell me?
Yeah, why did no one tell me? I
didn't notice. I really didn't. Like, do you know? It was like that, a bit like that.
Yeah,
do you know?
It was like that.
I kind of just got used to it, and then. We both got to the point where we can't take this anymore, and then suddenly you take this pill, and I was like, it's back. This is what it was like. Yeah, and I won't lie, like even now I'm still waiting for like one of it wears off.
Yeah.
I still feel a little bit like walking on eggshells sometimes because or a bit like even now you have a normal bad mood, or you know, just be like, oh fuck, you got something. I'm a bit like, you know, is it
the tipping
point? Is it not working? You know,
is it worn off? Well, I'm on a low dose, so I'll just take two. That was a joke, by the way. Don't take two of your medication to feel better. But it is like, I still feel a bit like that.
Yeah.
I think the best way to describe medication for me, my own personal puzzle, mental health is a puzzle and you have to build your own puzzle. And I assume that puzzle also changes. But like for me, I kind of felt like, it was the last little bit, but then I had all these other tools because I tried all the other stuff. So now if I don't feel great, going to the gym really helps get me back to normal.
Yeah.
Whereas previously it wouldn't. I'd feel like shit and, you know, you'd see everywhere, oh, physical exercise is great for mental health. And it is. And then I'd go to the gym and I'd still feel shit. And then I'd feel shit because I still felt shit. And I was like, why does the gym work for so many people and not for me? Is it because I'm broken? Is it because I'm fucked? You know, like whereas now, like a good solid nap in the afternoon or a trip to the gym or, you know, popping down the beach to do a little meditation or something, that works. That kind of gets me back to where I need to be, you know?
Yeah.
Can help me think clearly. So, yeah, that's... it's interesting that you described it as me being back.
It really was. It was just like a light bulb moment or something clicked. I was not used to you like coming downstairs in the morning and just like being happy. like being, you know, like ready for the day, really positive. It was fun, like you weren't fun before or anything, but you know, you have a bit more of a spring to your step.
Yeah.
More like, yeah.
I think pretending you're okay is really energy intensive.
Yeah.
Really fucking energy intensive. And not energy like the energy you need to do a, you know, a 12-hour day or, you know, do a long run or something. Like that's physical energy. That's different. I'm talking about like an emotional energy. And yeah, pretending everything's all right is fucking draining, you know. And even if, like, even if you've got a job you hate, going in and trying to pretend you don't hate it is fucking draining, you know. And I think my energy levels were just so depleted, and then I wasn't replenishing them in the right way. I was, you know, staying up late watching telly and spending too much time on my phone, and, you know, sat with the laptop, you know, just looking at crap. And yeah, you know, they're not, you know, it wasn't positive stuff. I needed something to help me see the world in a different way, I suppose. But another thing that I wanted to talk about, which is probably going to be quite difficult for us both to talk about, is you mentioned there not, you know, still being worried that I could slide or that things could change and the effect that's have. And it was something we were talking about the other week when we were talking about having another baby, because we're both quite broody.
Yeah.
And like Megan's 3.5 now. She's our youngest. So we're at a stage now where we don't really have a little baby in the house anymore after having, you know, some sort of baby for a long, long time. And we were talking about, you know, if we wanted to have another baby, and, you know, on the, like, the pros and cons, when people discuss it, you expect there to be, you know, financial, or, you know, sitting next to each other on the plane when you go on holiday, or, you know, paying extra for stuff, or, you know, whatever, you expect that. But do you remember why you said it wasn't a good idea?
Yeah, I did. I didn't want to risk your mental state. Like, you just got back to a good place, and obviously your trigger is lack of sleep and the added stress of a new baby and the change of our dynamic. Like, I feel like I'm broody and I miss a baby, but I don't feel like it's enough to risk that.
Yeah.
It feels like it's too big a cost. Like, because it'd be back to, I don't want to be back to square one again. Like,
and that's mad, you know. The whole idea with doing this is to talk about, like, how it affects the people that you live with. And I think that might be something that, you know, people haven't thought of, you know, it's like something it does, like future plans. So it can affect the now, and it can affect the mood in the house, and it can affect, you know, how you talk to each other, and it can affect, you know, all these sorts of things. But it does affect the future, doesn't it? Because you do worry, you do think, you know, I think of that with my work sometimes, you know, when I'm building stuff and coming up with ideas, I think, oh, what if this is too much? What if this sends me over the edge? You know, it makes me think, if I got offered like a big contract or a big line of work, you know, I'd have to give it some serious thought whether it's worth the risk. You have to play it quite safe, I think. Well, we have to. Again, like, you know, we're trying to, the aim of the podcast is to be relatable. So we're not telling anyone to play it safe, and we're not telling anyone to take risks. We're just saying, kind of, I suppose, what we have to consider.
Yeah.
And that's heavy, man, because I think that's heavy for you, because you're having to maybe compromise on some stuff because of me. And it's heavy for me because I know that we're compromising on some stuff because of me, you know?
Yeah, like, if it feels, might feel like that, but and I can see why you'd feel like that. I think if it was, if like a, you know, I think loads of people get giddy over babies, don't they? They think it necessarily means you really want one or it's right for you. You know, like it's not the only factor. So I wouldn't like put too much pressure on yourself about that. Like, if there's other, you know, there'd be many other reasons, but I just, for you to be, I just don't think we could go back to the how you were before. Do you know, like,
I don't think I'd make it through again, to be honest.
No,
do you know what I mean? Like, what would I do? Like, what else would I do? Do you know what I mean?
So when you like look back at something and you think, how on earth did we make it through that? Like, you know, it's only like that you bet and you look back and think, what on earth was that all about? Yeah. Like,
it's why I've slowed down my therapy. So rather than go weekly, I've been going sort of monthly, 6 weekly. And I mean, again, talking therapy is not for everyone. It really works for me, and I'm a big, big fan of it. And I'm very lucky to have found the right therapist, like, pretty early on, because, you know, all therapists are different. But one of those reasons is I'm not quite ready to dig into that stuff yet.
you don't like rock your boat.
Yeah, I'm just enjoying like things being not even normal, because I've kind of forgotten what normal is. I'm enjoying things being new.
Yeah.
You know, I'm enjoying this, like, it's like a honeymoon period, but a normal life, you know? Yeah. Like, even, like, the boring stuff, even the, you know, like the bath times and the bed times and the, you know, all the, like, the mundane, sat in front of fucking CBeebies in the, at 5 in the morning or whatever. You know, even that stuff's quite nice at the moment because I can cope with it and I can almost sit and enjoy the fact that I can cope with it.
It's enjoyable for me to do that as well, because I just, it's nice not feeling guilt, or if you do the early morning with the kids, or I have to go to work thinking, can you cope with this?
Yeah,
the kids are going to push me over the edge. Like, even if I was getting time off and you'd tag in, I'd be worried thinking about it,
Yeah.
Not that I'd ever think, you know, you couldn't, you know, but as the mum, I'd have to think.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, no, of course. I think that's pretty natural. I used to think that sometimes. If I had them, like, both, when they're a little bit younger and they're a little bit more, like, fucking mental. And I'd, if you were in a long shift and it would be, like, 9 o'clock and I'd already had them for a couple of hours and I'd be thinking, like, how am I going to get through today? I just want to, like, curl up under the kitchen table and I can't, you know.
Yeah.
And I suppose, in a way, it's a good thing, isn't it, because... you know, your kids
made you
are
focus on them.
Yeah, that's kind of how we survived the pandemic and the lockdown and stuff like that. We both said, didn't we, like, if we didn't have kids, it would have been really hard.
Yeah,
because we wouldn't have had a focus and a routine and a purpose and all that sort of stuff to kind of get us through these various lockdowns and shit that have been, happening. Yeah, and I like it. It's really interesting because, like, I can say this now, looking back, but depression made me really, really selfish. So I lived in my own head, and all I thought about was either how much I hated myself, or like how broken I was, or how feeling, I used to feel guilty about how I affected, my behavior affected you, but I'd make it about me rather than making it about you. So I use that guilt to beat myself up with, rather than do anything about it and try and, you know, make it up to you, or try and change, or it would just be another weapon I'd use against myself. So it does make you really, really selfish. So it's selfish when you're in it. And then when I kind of started really working my recovery, I had to be really, really selfish again, because, you know, I spent a lot, like, we went private for therapy and it's not cheap, you know.
And then you weren't working.
Been in and out of work, and, you know, so I closed my business, you know, and that I've always been like the main earner. I pay the mortgage and stuff like that. I closed the business. I started doing more expensive therapy and go into more yoga and meditation courses and, you know, all this sort of stuff. I had to be quite selfish. You know, I had to.
I remember you panicking about spending that money, and I was saying to you, we will find money for these therapy sessions. We wouldn't not pay our gas. We would not pay our lecky. We wouldn't not buy food. Like, it's just as important as all that stuff.
We can
do it.
I feel like it really made me really, really selfish. And then when you get to a place when you can kind of get past that and you get the energy back and you sort of start seeing life as it really is, because for me, mental health made me see the world in a way that doesn't exist, and the world was never like that. It's still the same life. I still have exactly the same, you know, like, all right, I've changed a few things, I've changed how I navigate it, but it's still the same life. We still live in the same house.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's still us, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's like being able to, I lost my train of thought there a little bit, but yeah, you realize, I suppose I've realized how like selfish I was. And then to hear, I've never thought of it from your perspective. I've never, you know, the first time you told me that you were a bit worried about our marriage, I never saw that. I never, you know what I mean? I wouldn't have thought that then. And now I hear it and I go, yeah, well, that makes perfect sense. Of course you were worried about our marriage. You know, your husband was like, you know, flying in and out of temper and, you know, crying on the floor in the bedroom. Yeah. And yes, of course you're worried about the marriage. You know, you've got the kids to think about.
Yeah. I mean, there were times you would literally say to me, you're not meant to be a family person. You're meant to be on your own. Yeah. There were times you literally said that. So I was think I remember being, well, when you started therapy, I was thinking you're going to come to realise that, you know. I just thought that, you know, you'd be talking to your therapist and you would just realise that you didn't love your wife and you needed to go off and do something.
I think, like, when people are struggling, when I was struggling, like they say about suicide, that people who think about suicide, they don't actually want to die. They just don't want to feel like they feel at that time and don't know how to stop or don't think it's possible to stop. It's like being trapped. And I look back now and I did used to say things like that, like shocking things, you know, like, oh, you know, I shouldn't be a dad to the kids, or I'm not a family person, or, you know, I think I want to take my own life, or, you know, I'd say these statements. And it's like a, it's kind of like a cry for help, but like a really misplaced one, because you were already really helping me, you know? And so it's not, it's like, I didn't know what else to do. And I just wanted someone. It's like when you fucking trying to, I don't know, solve a problem and you end up on Google for like 7 hours or in some like mad fucking, you know, Reddit thread to figure some shit out, and you get to the end of that rabbit hole and go, well, that hasn't helped.
Yeah. You
know, like, what do I do? And it was a bit like that, you know. And I think I just wanted someone to get so scared. I think I wanted you maybe to get so scared that you'd like make a really hard decision for me, you know, like have me sectioned or kick me out, and then I could say, well, you know, Kim kicked me out, you know, I didn't really want to go, because if I'd have wanted to go, I think I would have gone. Like, if I wanted to die, I probably would have killed myself, you know. Like, if you want to do these things, you do them, don't you?
In my head, I pictured it like depression being like this little devil on your shoulder, like making you say these things and like act a certain way because you wanted me to kick you out. Like, I think me and the kids are a contradiction to like what you're telling yourself. You're telling yourself you're worthless, we don't need you. Your words, not mine, by the way. But I don't think that's it. But me and the kids contradict that. Like, why? You've got a wife here that loves you, you've got kids that adore you. I know you question like your dad's skills when they were younger, but they've always adored you. They've never, you think of it worse in your head.
That's fucking like, that's a bit of a revelatory point, because when you're telling any sort of narrative, you want things to back up your story. And if you're telling yourself you're worthless, how can you have a wife that loves you if you're worthless?
Really contradicted them thoughts. Like,
that's been deep for you, that, mate.
I know,
some clever shit.
I do. It occurred to me, I was cycling to work the other day and that's what popped in my head. I was thinking about it and I thought, you know what, like, that makes so much sense to me.
There's a term for it. Like, it's something that people do, like, you always look for, I can't quite remember it. That's terrible podcasting. Podcast gold. But yeah, there is a term for when people do that. It's like they seek out things that back up this story, even though it's like the smallest thing.
Yeah.
And they will overlook huge things to get to that, to find the one anomaly that proves their point. Yeah. No, it's, I don't know, man. I see a difference in the kids towards me.
Yeah.
They're like, I don't know. It also, they seem to have forgiven me. It all seems to be forgotten. And I, you know, I wasn't like fucking like this ogre who came in and it's weird, isn't it? Because you can talk about having a better relationship with your kids. And, you know, I wasn't always the best dad, but that doesn't mean I was like some fucking horrible.
I just want to state for the record and this time
that it was always all right.
Don't want to make it sound like you're like abusive towards or anything. Sometimes it sounds
a bit like
a bit bad, doesn't it? You know, there's never, ever, ever anything like that.
I feel like they're different towards me.
Probably picked up on your energy, like, though, because I think that, do you remember we first had Reese and that health visitor come around and we were talking to her and she had this thing about how you know the type of mood someone's in when they enter the house. So when you come home from work, before they've said anything or you've seen them, you kind of sense if they're in a good or bad mood.
Yeah.
It's kind of, so they've probably like maybe picked up on that big sense that you're in a happier place, or
I remember saying that, and I remember, like, sometimes on bad days I would try and remember that, and I would try and channel on it to, like, put on a happy face rather than just a survival face. But it just goes to show, like, you know, once mental health, once these things take hold, you can't even pretend to be happy. It's just, you're just trying to pretend to fucking, just trying to get through life, you know? Mm. So what do you think is important for us now, right? So we're moving forward. So I've had a really good run now. Like, we've clocked up a good, like, half a year of me being good. And it's not dipped. And I've had a couple of bad days. I haven't had a bad week in this patch. I've had a couple of, not even full bad days.
Because you think even people without, like, mental health have bad days, you know? I think, like, I'll have a bad day, sleep it off, start the day again, you know? I think part of it, like, you can have a bad day and not want to kill yourself, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a bit not to 60, that, isn't it? Mm. So what do you think, like, for us? You know, so I've had a really good patch. So what do we need to be aware of? What do you keep an eye on? What are the signs? What are the sort of things that you see in me that you think, right, he needs a nap, or he needs to
go to the gym? I tend to, like, I can tell by how you look. It's like written all over your face. Like,
I think I look different on a good day. Yeah, it's weird.
Different, like,
I'm about fucking 10 years older for a start.
And it's a bit like what you said before about the energy. You just give off this vibe. Like, when you're at your worst, like, the atmosphere is, like, thick with this, like, what's that to call it? Tension, atmosphere, whatever it was. You could just sense it. You just knew, like, you weren't in a good place, you know? But, yeah, mostly you could see it on your face as well. Like, sometimes in your tone, you know, you can just tell someone sounds a bit fed up for it. You can just tell. And I think something we've got better as is, like, you try your best to try and hide it and just soldier on and it's all fine. And we've got better at saying, like, just tell me now if you're in a bad place. So then I can say, yeah, I've got to tell the kids, go do some yoga or go meditate or go get some fresh air. I think once again, communication is just, I'll just always say how important that is in anything.
Weirdly, I think it's a positive, because I've had to really tune into myself, and then I've had to express that to you. And some of the conversations we've had in the last few months since I've been better has definitely, like, improved our marriage.
Mm.
Because, to have those conversations. Because, like, when you said, you know, you weren't sure about maybe having another kid, like, that was really hard to hear, but I wasn't pissed off that I had to hear it. Like, you know, like, part of me was like, oh fuck yeah, I thought it was a really good point. And I really fucking loved that you were brave enough to say it, because you couldn't have said that to me a year ago.
Yeah,
that would have sent me over the edge.
I was just about to say, so you're not used to me saying stuff to you. Like, I think for years I've, like, held a lot in. Like, I knew you were on the edge, and your little push would blow up. So sometimes you're almost, like, picking for, like, a fight or something. So I do a lot of just keeping it, like, inwards, you know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say much about it, you know.
It's surprising that didn't affect your mental health.
No, I mean, it was hard. Like, don't get me wrong, I had, like, tough times, but it's more just worry and stress. And, of course, we know, like, the cause of, like, why that was going on. I was always just hoping it'd get better, you know. Yeah.
It's a bit like a mad film where you, like, fucking, you know, you married someone and then they, like, I don't know, swap.
I think, you know, life moves so fast for us, didn't it? Like, it kind of, yeah, just, you know, house, married, kids, and as well, because the kids were so young, like, I also had them to worry about. There were times, there were days where I knew you were struggling, but then also, so was I, and I have these babies to look after too. So I just didn't have it in me to worry.
Yeah.
So at times, just leave you to it, you know?
Yeah. No, it's, you can't carry the weight of the whole family all the time, you know. That's not your job. It's not your role. It's not what a marriage is. But yeah, I do think like now that you can say pretty much anything to me, because I really respected that you said that to me about the kids. Like, I kind of like, I don't know, man, it's nice. I'm really proud to be in a marriage where we can talk to each other like that, because I think a lot of people could, mental health or not, I think a lot of people couldn't fucking talk to each other like that.
Yeah.
So that's actually, that's kind of made us like stronger in a way. And in some things I feel like I need to make up for lost time. So I've spent all these years like bringing this fog into the family and adding all this stress. And it's like, right now I'm in a place where I can fucking, you know, I don't want to just go back to, not even normal, but just go back to a way of living as if that didn't happen. And I don't think, I don't quite know what I'm trying to say, because I don't want to, I don't feel like I have to make anything back to anyone because it wasn't my fucking fault.
Yeah, like, that's it.
But yeah, go on. Sorry.
And because we're like sitting here talking about your mental health, like specifically, it makes it sound like all these years it's been horrible and tough and like, and of course it has, but there was also really good memories, of course. You know, we made two babies, we had holidays, we've, you know,
been all right, isn't it?
It's easy
to think, isn't it, like the bad times.
You've had a lot of guilt that you carried as well, you know, but children, you're always so worried about the doing the night feeds and the like looking after the kids. You seem to carry so much guilt, and you try your best to help in whatever way you can. Like, some habits still like are still there, you know, you still cook, you still make sure I eat, you still you know, you used to, I remember when Reese was first born and I'd be like really upset because he's having a growth spurt, so I'd be like glued to the couch feeding this baby constantly. And I think now it sounds ridiculous, you think just put him down and go to the toilet, why couldn't you just do that? But I'd be like, I can't put him down. But you'd make sure I had my picnic and my drink. And Do you remember that time when Reese was really new and you got like, sorry, whoever gave us the money, but someone put money in a card to Reese, and he was having this growth spurt and he wouldn't settle, and you were like, right, we're going to spend his money, I'm going to go around the shop, I'm going to buy you a load of chocolate.
Yeah, yeah. Spent like 20 quid on,
spent 20 quid on like junk to try and get us through the night. You stayed up with me, you know, you didn't go to bed, you know.
Yeah.
You did amazing things too, you know, it's not doom and gloom. And
some of that was my downfall, really, because when it was good, it was still pretty good. Not as good as it is now.
And I think it's why it took a while to realise there's actually a problem here.
It's like having a bad back. You know, when your back is bad and you can't walk properly, it's all you can think about. You know, you think, how am I going to get to work? How am I going to get through the day? How am I going to cope? And then as soon as it's not bad, you know, like it's like you've never had a bad back. And you stop doing your fucking exercises. And, you know, like that's kind of, it's that pain. I think in therapy they call it an away from. You need a strong away from when you're in pain. But then when you're away from it, you know, it's like it never existed. So there you go. There you go. I think that's our story. I think that's your side of it.
Yeah, it's like, what would they maybe like to add a bit is how important it is to talk to someone, because you can feel quite selfish thinking, you know, like roll me out thinking, oh, I can't do this, and you know, you're struggling with your mental health, and I'm like, oh, this is hard. You know, it feels like it pales in comparison a bit. So, and I remember feeling I can't talk to anyone because it's your issue.
Yeah.
I almost in a way wanted to protect you, like, you know, your family don't live around here, you know, my family might naturally want to take my side, or you know, like, or George, I don't think they would, because they love you to, like, you know, just as much as I do. I think, I'm sure they'd have tried to help, but I didn't want them to worry. It was your journey, kind of thing.
So much of mental health and not speaking is like protecting the people that you love, like not wanting people to worry. And in doing that, you just like eliminate so many help sources, so much, you know, you just carry so much of other people's pressure. But it's huge. Like
I think about, so it felt like quite lonely in a way, because you didn't really know where to turn. But I remember speaking to some workmates about it, because I thought that was safe. I felt like they'd never really bump into you. It wouldn't matter what they knew, what was going on, really. So I remember one person I spoke to saying to try and get you to take medication, which is why when I first spoke to you about it, I mentioned medication. And then Yeah, so I think it was them. And what was nice, when you recently took your break off work and went down to Wales, and you put your post up online saying you were closing, taking a break. What was really nice, my friend reached out. Only one person did, and it was my best friend, Claire. Yeah. And I remember being really appreciative of that. She called me and said, do you want to go for a walk? And
yeah,
she was like, I'm here, Joe, if you need anything. It was really nice of her to do that.
Yeah. And speak up, man.
Just speak.
Yeah. It's hard. It's hard from your point of view. When do you intervene? That's such a hard decision. Who do you tell? Mm. How do you do it? How do you step in? And, depending on who's listening, if there's someone listening thinking, oh, I really relate to that. I need to step in for my husband or my wife. You just don't know how they're going to take it.
Mm.
Some people are going to be waiting for, I don't know. There's times I think if you'd have stepped in, I would have been like, oh, thank you, God. And there's other times I probably would have just told you, fuck off.
it's a very fine balance of knowing what to say. And I just remember that back to that Christmas incident and seeing if you just needed to, the rest reaction. And I kind of made me think, again, more weary of broaching it. I just didn't want to push you over the edge. I didn't,
It's so there's so many layers with mental health, asking for help but not wanting it, and wanting help and not asking for it, and it's so confusing. I think for me, for us, the more we talk about it together, the more we both understand it. The more I talk about it to other people, the more I understand it. Even on the podcast, we're chatting to all these different people, and some people have experienced mental health problems and some people haven't. They just work in different areas of wellness or something, but hearing other people talk is the more different voices we can add to the conversation, then I think it can really make a difference. And people do need to speak up. And that's, I think we both say that, isn't it? If you're listening to this now, if you're struggling, then speak to someone, anyone. And if you're a wife listening to this, what would you say? If you're a wife listening to this and you think your husband is drowning, and some of this is relatable, what would you say? What would you say if it was one of your friends who rang you up and said, oh, I think, my other half is going through something like what Tom went through?
Well, I think you just got to try and get him to talk about it. I think you've just try and broach it, get him to listen to this podcast.
I think it talk and then take action.
Take action, definitely.
Because that was my biggest mistake. Once I started therapy, I thought, oh, I've cracked this. And every week I'd go and sit on that settee and I'd talk and I'd talk and I'd talk and I'd talk. And I think, oh, I'm going to stumble over this thing. It's going to come out. Yeah. It's going to be one thing and I'm going to realise it and everything's going to fall into place. And all I did was fucking talk.
Yeah.
And it was only when I started taking action and deciding to, rather than delve into my past to try and find something that wasn't there, it was only when I suppose started looking at ways of surviving the future that things change.
It's a good point that do something, anything, with meditation, yoga, whatever it is, just something, take some sort of action.
Right?
Yeah, you can
look at us now,
think taking action, for us, it saved our family as well as your life,
Saved our marriage. Yeah.
Yeah.
Here we go. So I think that's our story, babe.
Yeah. Happy story with that? All told, yeah.
Yeah. There you go. So, we're going to have a cup of tea and go watch a bit of Netflix and go to bed before it all starts again tomorrow, right?
Yeah. Rock and roll.
Oh, no, and if you are listening, speak up. This is some fantastic resources out there now, and reach out to them, speak up, and you can be all right. And thank you very much for listening to this. As always, let us know what you think. Please please subscribe, tag it, tell your mates. We want to make open and honest conversations about mental health relatable. We want to normalize these type of chats, a married couple sitting around the table and having the sort of chats that make your belly feel funny and bring a tear to your eye, but they tend to be the most fucking important ones. And if we want to normalize these conversations, then people have to hear us having them. And people hear us having them by people who are listening, telling friends and leaving us reviews and getting us up the chart and all that sort of stuff. So if I do nag for that stuff, it's not for any sort of personal gain. It's because it just helps us work towards our goal. But thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for the support. Kimbo, thank you for that, babe.
Aww.
Thank you for joining me.
Oh, you're welcome.
And yeah, we'll see you next time on the next episode of the Proper Mental Podcast. Thank you. We'll be right back.